Is Trump a cause or is Trump a symptom? He's both. He's both a cause and a symptom. We'll never be able to address our longstanding problems as long as Trumpism is there. And as long as Trumpism is there, it's a reminder that these background conditions will always be there to enable a potential fascist leader.
That's Jason Stanley, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Jason Stanley and Andy Z on resisting fascism. As a political ideology, fascism developed in Mussolini's Italy more than a century ago. At its core, fascism conjures up a mythic past. There's a nostalgia for a so-called purer time. Its advocates deploy a raw appeal to nationalism. Opponents are demonized. Politicians spew racist dog whistles. Minorities are scapegoated. Fascists use fear, one of the most powerful human emotions, to manipulate people. It can cause people to abandon rational thinking. And there's always the implied threat and actual use of violence. The great radical historian Howard Zinn said, "You can't be neutral on a moving train." Is this a moment where you want to be neutral? The train is moving. You have a choice. Our guests today are Jason Stanley and Andy Z. Jason Stanley is professor of philosophy at Yale University and the author of How Fascism Works. Andy Z is spokesperson for Revolution Books and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. In this virtual event recorded on September 30th, Andy Z was in Los Angeles and Jason Stanley in New Haven, Connecticut. We begin with Jason Stanley.
My book was published 2 years ago. At the time, people charged me with alarmism. I would like nothing more than to be wrong, than to have been wrong. However, I'm concerned that events have, if anything, vindicated the concerns that I was raising in my work. The reasons people gave for why I was being alarmist is they said things like, fascism requires an informal militia on the streets. It requires a relationship between the leader and militias on the streets. And we see no such development in the United States. We do not see white supremacist militias being organized to defend the fascist social and political movement. That's one case. We were presented with a reason for why the description fascism was overwrought. And I think that has been met. We saw in the debate Trump talking to the Proud Boys, telling them to stand down and stand by. There is clearly some kind of informal messaging going on between leader and militias. That's the concern here. Now, no one would like to be wrong more than me, let me add. So the second reason that people gave for why calls for fascism were overblown was that the president was not calling into question the democratic system. The president wasn't claiming that elections were rigged, the system was corrupt. The president was not saying that it's either me or the system is rigged. He wasn't directly attacking democracy. Well, I think we see that the president is directly attacking democracy. So again, I would like to be wrong. However, that is not the situation in which we find ourselves. Third, the reason that people gave to say that my concern about incipient fascism was alarmist was that the president was not taking control of the party and taking control of the institutions of government. The institutions were supposedly still independent, according to the critics of my work. Fascism is a cult of the leader. It's a cult of the leader who promises national restoration in the face of supposed threats by immigrants, minorities and leftists. And people said, the Republican Party is not a cult of the leader. The Republican Party is not the same as Trumpism. We're not seeing the courts being taken over, the institutions being taken over by a cult of the leader, by devotion to the leader. There, too, my concern is that we have seen significant progress on that particular front. Now, I want to give you some conceptual tools with which to think through the topic of fascism. One thing people say is that how can it be fascism if you, Jason Stanley, are not already in prison? Well, it's true that if this was a pure fascist regime, I would be in prison. And so we do not have a pure fascist regime. In fact, I would go as far as to say we live in a democracy whose institutions are threatened, whose voting system is deeply compromised historically and in the present. But it is still, by and large, a place where you can speak your mind, although that is slowly changing for academics. But it is still the case you can speak your mind. You have a free press. Let's distinguish between a fascist regime, a fascist social and political movement, and fascist tactics. My 2018 book, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them, was actually about fascist tactics. What I was arguing was that there are fascists all across the world. My book is not about the United States. It's about a worldwide movement that you see in Brazil, in India, in Israel. You see in a number of different countries, in Hungary, in Poland, in Russia. You see in many countries, fascist tactics being employed. Indeed, you see them being employed in liberal democracies that treat migrants with horror and placing them in horrific situations to try to encourage them to self-deport. This is a fascist tactic, but it's a fascist tactic we can see being employed in liberal democracies. So we can talk about fascist social and political tactics. And my book goes through 10 fascist social and political tactics, all of which I think we see employed here. For example, chapter 9 is called Sodom and Gomorrah. You represent the cities as dens of iniquity, is filled with foreigners and immigrants and leftists and crime and burning, and you run against the cities to draw a kind of anti-urban, anti-minority, anti-elite vote. We certainly see that tactic being employed in this election. So we can talk about fascist and social and political tactics, but we can also talk about a fascist social and political movement. And a fascist social and political movement can occur in a liberal democracy. Indeed, National Socialism was a fascist social and political movement occurring in a liberal democracy. One question you need to ask yourself is Trumpism a fascist social and political movement? What would that mean? Well, is it a cult of the leader? Does Trump have a bond between himself and his supporters that is unbreakable, that is one that his supporters trust him over anything? Fascism only recognizes patriarchal authority. It only recognizes the authority of the leader. The leader does not, therefore, views all other kinds of authority, like scientific authority, as a threat to their leadership. So you have to ask yourself, is that what we're seeing now? Is the movement of Trumpism bound together by a conspiracy theory like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion? So you have to ask yourself that. Are they saying that there are elites that are seeking to bring communism to the country and are using immigration laws to try to flood the country with immigrants and destroy its character and bring homosexuality and depravity in to weaken traditional Christian faith, a la traditional, and that was like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Do we see such a conspiracy theory here? I would argue, yes, we see Trumpism working in tandem with this sort of conspiracy theory. So you can have a fascist social and political movement in a country that is still a liberal democracy. It's going to take a lot for the United States to lose all vestiges of liberal democracy. If you look at Brazil right now with Jair Bolsonaro, Bolsonaro is pleading with the Brazilian military to place him as a military dictator. And the military is saying, no thanks. So you can have a fascist social and political movement in a country whose institutions are still resistant. And one might could be concerned that Trumpism fits the bill. So when people talk about fascism, that doesn't mean that you live in a country with a fascist regime. It means that you need to worry about a fascist social and political movement that employs fascist tactics. And when you have a fascist social and political movement, you need to look to the country's institutions. Do you have a quasi-military institution tied up with colonial wars, imperialist wars, that is devoted to distinguishing citizen from non-citizen and can be directed internally against political opponents? If you have such an institution, and arguably ICE fits the bill of such an institution, then you need to be concerned about fascist creep. That's not to say you live in a fascist under a fascist regime. It's to say you can intervene now with protests, with nonviolent protests, with organizing the vote, with bringing people to the polls, with creating alliances between different groups, between conservatives, progressives, to restore democratic norms. When you say, oh, I'm worried about fascism, and people say, oh, you know, you'd be in prison if this was fascism, you have to say back to them, I'm not worried about this being a fascist regime. I'm worried about there being a Trumpism, for example, being a fascist social and political movement. Why would we need to be worried about fascism in the United States? I want to make two more points. First, people say, when you talk about fascism and you say Trump is a fascist, Trumpism is a fascist social and political movement. People say, well, Trump isn't at all like, he isn't German or Italian, he's very American. Well, that's a conceptual error about fascism. All fascism must be local. Fascism is palingenic ultranationalism. It's a leader who says, I am the country, and I promise to restore the country's greatness. That leader must be the most archetypical member of that country. The fact that Trump, you couldn't be more American than President Trump, is not an argument that he isn't a possible fascist leader. It's an argument that he is a possible fascist leader. Relatedly, I want to underscore the Eurocentrism of the debate of people who say, oh, it couldn't possibly be fascism because this isn't Germany or Italy. That's an extremely Eurocentric take. I do not think that Trump is much like Hitler at all. I don't think he threatens a genocide of minority groups, although the treatment of immigrants is a human rights violation of the first level, and we have normalized that in this country. But I think that the United States has been engaged in human rights violations against its black population for basically its entire existence. So Trump is not adding anything new. I don't think we need to turn to Europe, to mid-century Europe, to look for parallels here. I think we have plenty of parallels in the Americas, in Latin America. We have Latin American fascist movements. We have military dictatorships. We have autocracies. We have authoritarian regimes. We have Pinochet. If you look at on the West Coast, in the right-wing rallies, at the T-shirts people are wearing, valorize the execution of political opponents under Latin American dictators. We need to look to that model, not to mid-century Europe. We need to look in the history of the United States to the white supremacist groups that Trump winks to in his comments. We need to look at Ku Klux Klan ideology, which strongly overlaps with National Socialist ideology, which says that there's a cabal, a globalist cabal, that's bringing immigrants in to destroy the white race. You know, that communists are using labor unions to advance communism, that social justice is a mask to destroy Christianity. So we need to look for parallels in the Americas, and we need to look for parallels in the history of the United States itself. When people say, oh, but Trump is very American, that is an argument that he's a potential leader of a fascist social and political movement, not an argument against. And we don't need to make these analogies to Europe. And with that, I will hand the microphone over to Andy.
Okay, well, thank you, Jason. I'm going to make two overarching points that I hope people get out of our entire discussion. There'll be differences. There are differences between us on this, but it's differences within a framework. But my two points are, first, that we are in the midst of a rolling coup of the Trump-Pence regime. Second, now is the time that we have to act to prevent them from carrying this all the way through. We are facing a fascist regime that has truly made horrific and momentous progress in bringing about and advancing a fascist America. This is a regime that is tearing up the rule of law. And at the heart of fascism is that. All the 10 characteristics in your book and more, all of this is part of fascism. But ultimately, to enforce the kind of world that that Jason was just talking about, in terms of the white supremacy, the patriarchy, the xenophobia, which means the hatred of foreigners, all of this can only be instituted with ultimately a change in the form of rule, where that rule is the rule of the leader. It is the rule of the fascist party, which is being forged through this Republican Party. But look, this is a regime that demonizes immigrants, black people, LGBTQ people, women, Native Americans, the media, and peaceful protesters. This is a regime that opposes science, as you brought out. This is leading to a country right now that is literally burning and drowning at the same time into unbelievable, unnecessary death from COVID. And at the core of this regime is an unholy alliance between Trump and a Christian fascist movement that has been developing in this country for decades. And they are organized. They are organized up into the military. They have been organized up into the military. They're organized into police forces. They're organized into communities. And this is the core of this regime. This is the organization that people used to challenge you with, Jason, and say, well, where's the organization? Well, there's an organization there that nobody would have ever believed that Trump would come to head a Christian fascist movement. But that is actually what happened, and that is the Faustian bargain that they both made, and some of this is brought to bear in Michael Cohen's new book, Chapter 6. Trump also unleashes, and you brought this out, in the basest white supremacist racist heart of America in a way that we've seen before in this country. We can't forget that. What used to be dog whistles are now for real. My second point is, yes, they have not yet fully consolidated fascist rule. That is true for now, but that should give us no comfort. That's my second point. Now, you can say that a regime means fully consolidated fascist rule. I'm saying there's a regime there that has not consolidated the rule over the country. Three, there is, as I said, a rolling coup that is barreling towards a showdown around the election. Trump is already stealing this election. He has a plan in place to use key institutions, the Supreme Court, violent thugs, in and out of uniform to keep his regime in power. That is why it is so urgent that people take up from many different points of view the call that Refuse Fascism has put out to form a broad-based movement where every single demand, every single aspiration for a decent life has to go through removing this regime from power. For if it succeeds in power, all your dreams and aspirations for a decent life, for Black Lives Matter, for immigrant rights, for the climate, for not even be subjected to nuclear war. We can't forget that this man says if we have nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? All of this is why it's so urgent. The Trump-Pence regime is undermining voting rights right now. And what he lied about in the debate around what happened in Philadelphia, nonetheless, that his people were thrown out, is they went there to intimidate voters. The Christian fundamentalists have already organized 10,000 people to be poll watchers. He and his fascist groups have said they're going to mobilize 50,000 former and in and out of uniform military and police to be poll watchers, which really means poll intimidators, and particularly against Black and Latino people. Third, this regime has repeatedly told us, and they've shown us, that they are preparing to stay in power by any and all means. That is the point at which Jason just warned of, that we're not at yet, but we could be. When Donald Trump was given the chance to say he would he respect the election, he would not do it. He said the election will be a fraud and illegitimate. He is now, and as I just said, and he's calling out, and he called out his poll watchers in the debate. These are anti-Semitic and fascist and racist thugs. And he said that he will win this because he has stacked the courts. That was the meaning of what he said. Chris Wallace asked him this directly. Another example. His attorney general, he has turned into his private lawyer and the lawyer of the regime. He has backed up this whole campaign to delegitimize the election with false claims. He's threatened people who protest on the eve of the election, or rather on the election night, with sedition. This is a very serious thing. Why should we not take him seriously? Is there anything that's been indicated that this is a fascist tactic that could actually lead to fascist rule should they actually do it? He's been defending Trump as the one ruler and not the rule of law. So look, I would say, just to make this point, bring this rolling coup point, there's every evidence that the Trump-Pence regime will not accept the election results if he loses. All this stuff that Trump does is not just some madman talking, but this is actually has a purpose. It demoralizes and it intimidates the opposition, including from going to the polls. Point four, the Biden campaign and the Democratic Party leadership have told us and shown us that they are not going to fight Trump the way he needs to be fought. They want to play by rules that the Trump-Pence regime wants to and needs to shatter to bring about this program. Oh, my fifth point. But it is really an emotional thing to think of what if this regime stays in power, what this is going to mean for the people of the world and the people of this country. You know, it's almost unbelievable to me that we could be sitting here at this point in October with tens of thousands of people in concentration camps on the border, COVID hotbeds with people being deported. Imagine a second term here. Imagine these people in power. Now, what I want to say about the genocide of the Nazi Germany in the Holocaust, that wasn't the plan that Hitler had, as you've spoken of yourself, Jason. The plan was to deport Jews, to get them out of Germany, and then eventually, as they expanded Germany, to get them on the other side, deep into Russia. But the exigencies of the war, the problems they ran into in the war, particularly against the then Soviet Union, led them at a certain point, fairly late in the game, 8 years into the game, before they took a decision to exterminate the Jews. Then one other thing I want to say about the reality of what a second term will mean for Trump, whether legitimate or illegitimately achieved, is exhibit one would be Modi in India, Erdogan in Turkey, Duterte in the Philippines, and exhibit two is what you began to see in Portland. Every aspiration people have for justice or for a decent world now has to go through removing this regime. If Trump doesn't win by a landslide on election day, they are preparing for everything I just said. They are preparing to take power by any and all means necessary. What does the history that we faced in the last 3 years tell us? That he doesn't do the things he says he's going to do? He's tried to do everything he said he would do, and he's succeeded at many of them. This is why we have to begin this fight right now. It'd be too late to mobilize later on. But if we only rely on voting, it's going to be disastrous. Look, Biden was clearly saying to people, don't get out in the streets in major ways. I'm not saying that he won't say, stand guard outside or be outside a place where votes are being counted. But this is not a Sunday school exercise here. What Trump is preparing for is deadly serious. This is why what we're calling for is non-violent, sustained protest. All different views. I want to see never-Trumpers. I want to see Democrats. I want to see Bernie people. I want to see anarchists out into the streets here and organizing this. So those are some points I wanted to make. I just want to open it up to you. If you want to help frame what we should get into, that would be great.
Yes, so there's an issue raised by your remarks about how we think of Trumpism with respect to what you referred to as the long history of U.S. fascism. Sarah Churchwell, Bradley Hart, these are some of the authors who've documented, my colleague Jim Whitman, these are some of the authors who've documented the long history of fascist ideology and fascist thought in the United States. It overlaps and is connected with the Ku Klux Klan, white supremacy, and the ideologies we're seeing today. It's baked into our system, as Black Lives Matter makes clear, with the prison industrial complex, the carceral state. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world. Black Americans are among the most incarcerated people in human history. So all of that preceded Trump. Is Trump a cause or is Trump a symptom? He's both. He's both a cause and a symptom. We'll never be able to address our longstanding problems as long as Trumpism is there. And as long as Trumpism is there, it's a reminder that these background conditions will always be there to enable a potential fascist leader. As Charles Lindbergh, the spokesperson for the America First movement, was viewed by the National Socialists, a potential American fascist leader. So we need to get at these underlying problems. The situation goes deeper than just our history of racism. It goes back to capitalism itself. Because with capitalism unfettered is going to lead to fascism. Because capitalism unfettered will lead to an immiserated masses. These immiserated masses will need to be entertained by cultural war again. They'll need to be set against each other with racial politics while their wallets are being stolen, while the taxes are being cut for the wealthy oligarchs that run things. The immiserated masses will need to be kept in their place by a powerful police force. Police forces all across the country are being asked to play this role of adjudicating the social problems that come from class inequities. And I don't blame them. They're put in an impossible situation to try to deal with the fact that a large portion of humanity in cities, mostly black and brown Americans, are immiserated and impoverished, while others are incredibly wealthy. So you're just going to see as more material inequality develops, as more jobs get outsourced, get automatized, get sent to robots to do, to AI, you're going to see more and more people enter a world of hopelessness. And you're going to need a powerful police state to control them. And you're going to need a cultural politics that sets them against each other. So we're going to need to deal with those problems. A Biden-Harris administration will need to deal with these problems. But in the first instance, we must stop the result of those problems. And the result of those problems is Trumpism. Trumpism is as American as apple pie. It harkens back when Trump calls for patriotic education. What is he calling for? He's calling for the kind of education that Du Bois denounces in the final chapter of Black Reconstruction. The chapter is entitled The Propaganda of History. And Du Bois denounces the way that historical education was explicitly set up to try to unify the South and the North, the white South and the white North, to try to obscure and hide the crimes of Reconstruction, of the end of Reconstruction. Make no bones about it. When Trump talks about patriotic education, when he targets Nicole Hannah-Jones and the 1619 Project, the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones says, the American ideals are great, and Black Americans mainly realize them, which is inarguably true, that Black Americans had a central role in realizing American, or in helping to realize American ideals. But of course, she's a Black journalist, and she's calling attention to the history of Black Americans that is threatening to white Americans, that forces them to regard Black Americans as having an equal place or having a deeply respected place. Black Americans are the vanguard of anti-fascism in the United States. So Trump has been attacking education. He threatened to remove federal funding from school districts that use the 1619 Project. The 1619 Project is not some radical project. Nicole Hannah-Jones begins her essay talking about an American flag and how patriotic Black Americans are. It's incredibly patriotic. But what Trump is doing is he's returning us to this idea that Black Americans must know their place. And we must teach a history where Black Americans know their place. This is America's overlap with fascism. This is what I call in my book, the mythic past. So we have this long history. We have rampant capitalism. We have the failure to deal with the financial crisis that is on Obama and Biden's shoulders. We have mutual culpability here. But this should be a gut check moment where Republicans, Democrats, leftists like me, social conservatives, all of us who believe in democracy must bond together and say, no, we're not going to be threatening. What we want to return to is a diverse, multicultural, multi-valued American democracy, and not white Christian fascism, which is frankly what threatens.
You're listening to Jason Stanley and Andy Z on Resisting Fascism. This is Independent Alternative Radio. Stay tuned at the end to learn how you can get copies of this program, as well as Jason Stanley's book, How Fascism Works. Our website is alternativeradio.org.
It is true that at the root of fascism is the capitalist system. I do agree with you that. And it's a system that cannot possibly meet the needs of all of humanity. It's not how it's set up. It's a system that is developed historically. It developed historically alongside of feudalism and slavery, and actually was able to incorporate both elements into it, particularly in this country, which is that is the unholy union that began the country. As people know, we don't have time here to rehearse it all in terms of the founding constitution, not only legitimating slavery, but not even allowing discussion of it for the first 20 years of the republic that so many people uphold. But fascism is one possible resolution of the contradictions that the people who rule this capitalist system face. And there is a very sharp divide at the top of society right now between those who want to basically continue the political order as it's been, maybe even expand it some. That was the content of the debate between Bernie and Biden people, if you will. How do we make it more inclusive, make capitalism work for the people? Versus, on the other hand, the people who are behind Donald Trump and who he's come to represent exactly because he doesn't give a damn about any of that, and he's willing to shatter the norms, who see that America needs to go back to those mythical values that you talk about, but actually the material reality of it was slavery, it was the tremendous exploitation and actually a demonization and oppression of immigrants that the country was actually founded on, and the oppression of women. All of this is built into the system, and really what you see developing here, and your book also points out this is developing around the world, is an apartheid state. An apartheid state is a fascist state, that because you have a minority. And this is exactly this cultural battle you were just talking about, that he actually said it straight up there, that it's unfair, you know, multiculturalism. It's unfair because it's discriminating against white people. And we could take the next literally 3 hours walking through the statistics of the disparity between white and black people, white and Latino people, Latino and black people. We'd spend the whole day on it, and we wouldn't begin to touch what this means for people's lives, including COVID, that is disproportionately affecting Latino and black lives. You speak a lot about, and your book is about, and your work is about the influence of language and ideology on people, how people think. I'd actually like you to talk a little bit about how the overall public discourse has been changed. Certainly what used to be said in dog whistles are now said openly by the Trump regime. But also the more liberal progressive strata has come to tolerate a language and to accept things being said that would have been unacceptable. So I'm packing two questions together in terms of the seriousness of what we face in terms of the lives of the masses of people. And it makes me very angry when people say, oh, the institutions are gonna hold, because when they don't hold, then people die in massive numbers.
So history doesn't ever exactly repeat itself, but it plays similar. And if we look at the consequences, the choices that will be made at the polls, and what they will be for human life, we have two enormous risks. The first is climate change. It's not too late, but we need to act very quickly. The world cannot afford another 4 years of climate change inaction. And make no mistake, this administration, Jair Bolsonaro's administration in Brazil, these are nihilistic ideologies that almost embrace a kind of self-destruction. And that too is fascist in its nature. I mean, Hitler's nihilism was enacted with the insane desire for world domination. Bolsonaro and Trump's nihilism seems to be enacted with the desire for world destruction with climate change. Bolsonaro seems to be destroying the Amazon for its own sake as this kind of nihilism. And similarly with Trump's environmental policies, seems to be poisoning the air, the water, the earth. You know, we do not have time. These wildfires and the complete denial of science, the complete denial of reality, this mirrors the complete denial of reality that we saw with fascist leaders of the past, thinking they could conquer Russia, rule the world, enslave the world. That's what we're seeing now, this idea of this complete denial of reality. And if we look at the number of bodies that may result from this, the body count might be very similar as the fascist movements in the past. So that's where I see this danger coming, because people are right to say that the Obama administration brutalized immigrants, not to this level, not anywhere near to this level. This is unprecedented, what's happening under Trump. You know, the prison industrial complex is a longstanding feature of the United States. But, you know, climate change is the most important issue humanity faces. And on that, we can talk about genocide. And there might be no comparison with the past in terms of the bodies, in terms of the destruction. So that's number one. Number two, about language. So language is completely changed. We've normalized it. It was key to understand American politics before Trumpism. It was key to understand the notion of plausible deniability. Somebody would talk, you know, Paul Ryan would talk about makers versus takers, or inner city, the problems of the inner city. And people would say, that's racist. And they would say, no, it isn't. I'm just talking about the middle of cities, you know. But now what we've got is implausible deniability, blatant lying, which is a complete power move. So Trumpism, a fascist social and political movement, involves a relationship between the leader and the supporters where the leader can openly lie and it pleases the supporters. It pleases the supporters because this kind of politics is a politics of what the philosopher Susanna Siegel pointed out, of Schadenfreude, a delight in the pain of one's enemies. Timothy Snyder calls it sadopopulism. The desire is to see, you know, Trump, their leader is getting away with it. Their leader is openly lying. Their leader is openly cheating. He's doing it for them. He's getting away with it. It just shows his power. And it's all about power. This kind of politics is all about power. What we need to do is we need to return the United States to a rule of law state. And then once it's a rule of law state, we can adjudicate our political differences. But right now, you've got a situation where Trump doesn't lose any supporters by blatantly lying. He blatantly said, you know, the New York Times got hold of his tax returns. The tax returns showed $750, that he paid $750 in 2016, 2017. And he blatantly just said, no, that's wrong. I paid millions and millions of dollars. His supporters don't care. And now we've got the open conspiracy theories. We've got many Republican candidates running for Congress who are fans of QAnon. QAnon looks a lot like some mixture, Nazi conspiracy theory, Protocols of the Elders of Zion, and blood libel. So conspiracy theories end up being anti-Semitic. And we have to remember that anti-Semitism, the Nazi anti-Semitism, was not directed against religious Jews in the first instance. It was directed against Judeo-Bolsheviks, leftist Jews. And the idea was communism was a Jewish plot. So what we have now is we have Republicans using classic anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and then saying, but look, I'm pro-Israel. But look, the Orthodox Jews support us. Well, hey, Nazi anti-Semitism was never directed against Orthodox. was not in the first instance directed against Orthodox Jews. It was directed against secular Jews like me, against liberal Jews. But that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing open conspiracy theories, and we're seeing a presidential administration devoted to trying to reconstruct these conspiracy theories by showing that there's a deep state plot. We're seeing a fascist propaganda where you call your enemy what you are. You're the corrupt one. You're the criminal administration. And then above all, we're just seeing this idea that we're seeing fascist law and order. What is fascist law and order? Fascist law and order is when what the leader wants is the law. So the entire RNC was a Hatch Act violation, was illegal. But it was a blatant way to show off the leader's power. We have to somehow get away from those politics, get away from the thrill people have of seeing their leader dominate the opposition and cut their health care and cut their union benefits and cut the taxes of the wealthy. But as long as their leader is getting his, they're happy. We have to get away from that politics.
I want to just go into just a couple things in terms of what is to be done about this right now and why it's so urgent that we actually take actions in the streets across all kinds of political and ideological and gender and national divides. It's really, the future does depend on it. I said this was a rolling coup. What that means is that step by step, the rule of law is being torn asunder. What it means is that civil norms, which you've just spoken about, civil norms, how people relate to each other, they're being shredded. People talk about this. You see this in supermarkets, in Walmarts. It means that what you've counted on before does not exist any longer. And the Trump-Pence regime, before it even was in power, Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani said and expressed what was said privately in their ranks, that this, they viewed this being the Trump-Pence regime, was their last chance to bring about the worldview that they had. And there was a very coherent worldview expressed in this Christian fascist movement, and there were other strains of fascism that have all congealed around Donald Trump. This, they saw, was their last chance, and it doesn't matter whether that was accurate or not. That's what they actually believe, and that's what they're acting on. And so we face a situation with this election. In order for them to stay in power, they will do whatever it takes. You know, we've been through this over the last 3-4 years. Oh, the responsible adults in the room are going to stop this, the three generals. They did not. The Mueller report's going to do that. He did not, and in fact, there's plenty of evidence coming out now that he basically threw the case. But every step of the way, the blue wave, that's going to save us. No, it didn't. But people want to hold on to something. They want to hold on to an illusion. They don't do what needs to be done. We had at one of our rallies, Refuse Fascism's rallies last week, was around the 200,000 death mark being met in Chicago. We did them around the country, but in Chicago, a professor from the College of Charleston, Joshua Shaines, I don't know if you know him or not, but Joshua Shaines, he also studied fascism. He made the point that, you know, there's no predetermined point where it becomes too late, but it does become harder and harder and harder to stop. And the longer you wait, the more death and destruction takes place. You know, we're not going to take the time now to get into this discussion of, well, it was really 1938 that with Kristallnacht in Germany. That's when it became too late. No, really, it waited till 1941. Well, actually, I think it was 34. It became increasingly difficult for there to be resistance. And actually, anything after 1938 would have been extremely difficult to stop. When there's no longer a rule of law, then all the things, if you're an immigrants' rights activist, if you're a Black Lives Matter activist, if you're working on the climate, everything you've been working for, that gets wiped off the books. Well, I can give you a witness of plenty of people, including your family, who did get out, but who didn't get out because they thought this would blow over. We both know how many Jews returned to Germany in 1934 because they thought it would. This couldn't possibly happen in the liberal democracy of Germany. So this is why we are calling for, Refuse Fascism is calling for, let's get in the streets now, nonviolent, sustained protest. In the beginning, this is going to be like a town square You know, I don't know if it'll start some city with a dozen people, some people hundreds, maybe other 1,000 people. Far insufficient. But it'll be a place people can come. They're going to talk. They're going to get materials. They're going to have to develop forms of organization with people who've never worked together before because these fascist thugs are going to come by. We've already had that situation develop here in Los Angeles where the fascists have said they're going to come. So we'll have to be serious. We'll have to reach out to communities. But we have to get to a situation where it's not just tens of thousands of fascist poll watchers who are intimidating people, but where there's masses of people saying, we don't want to live like this. Joshua Shaines was quoting another fascist scholar who said, who studied a particular town in Germany. He said in the 30s, he said, not a united front of the decent people. That's what we actually need. And I think that this is something that is so urgent right now. And sure, Biden wins by a landslide. Trump says, see you later. Okay, then we got a different set of contradictions, different set of problems we got to deal with. But if you're banking on that, you're not paying attention to what's happening right now. And the even worse horror that could come, I completely agree with you on the climate. I also think it's a horror for immigrants and black people on a scale unimagined. I also think it's a horror on COVID. I also think that the world is not standing still for Donald Trump. And there's going to be things that are going to mature. And this is somebody who has said, if we have nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? People should be very frightened on the one hand of what could happen, but very buoyed by the fact that there is a way still to stop this. Yes, vote in massive numbers, but if we're not in the streets, it's not going to happen. Every progressive change that has come in this country has come through the struggle of masses of people. That is when things have changed. LBJ didn't just do what he did around the Civil Rights Act because he was just an anti-racist, far from it. It's because there was a massive movement in the streets and actually that was threatening to get way out of control. The need for people to act is historically accurate and necessary.
The strategy the Trump administration seems to be following is to try to convince people that Election Day will decide things. What they've done is they've convinced their supporters that COVID is not to be taken seriously. So if you look at the people who plan on voting on Election Day in person, they massively favor Trump. Then if you look at the people who plan to vote by mail, they even much more massively favor Biden. So what the plan seems to be is to declare victory on Election Eve and say, well, it's the end of the election, and before the votes are counted. So what we have to do is we have to think not in terms of election day, but in terms of election month. It's going to be a while before the full results are in. And Biden will have to win by a lot. And I think he will win by a lot, as long as we get everyone we know out to vote. We have to be on the streets because they will try to steal the election using the fact that they have a large same-day in-person voting election advantage. So we absolutely need to be on the streets. There needs to be that political pressure. I think what you're seeing, however, which is frightening but shouldn't dissuade us, is we're seeing police across the country practice tactics on nonviolent protesters. They're practicing provoking them into action. They're practicing, I'm sure you've seen this, Andy, seeing videos of police seizing people on the streets and gatherings that make no sense other than practicing.
This does speak to why we are trying to get this going now. It's not going to be easy to deal with this. This is what you're speaking about, the way they're coming at protesters now. The game has changed. Look, when the Attorney General says we're going to charge people with sedition if they protest on election night, it would be wise to take that seriously, including that they're going to be out in, these thugs are going to be out in massive numbers. You can't assemble a movement overnight. And just meeting in little conclaves now on Zoom to plan for that, that's fine. We should do that. People should do that. But we have to gain experience together. out in the streets, and people have to understand this is going to be nonviolent. I wanted to say this. This will be a little bit longer point. I think people should imagine two different things that are not nice to imagine. Then we can imagine some things that are nice to imagine, which Jason said before, what we would begin to do after Trump leaves, if he does leave, you know, including that there'll be a lot of struggle amongst each other. What is the way that we could actually have a world fit for human beings, where humanity as a whole could flourish, not just some people in one country, but people all over the world? We'll have differences among ourselves, and we'll certainly have differences with the people who are enforcing this world, because as Jason brought out earlier, mass incarceration existed before Donald Trump, as did deportation. But I wanted people to imagine two things that are not, maybe people don't go to. Imagine a second term of Donald Trump, even one legitimately. Just imagine that, unrestrained at that point, and then wanting to develop successors to that. Just think about what that's going to mean to masses of people, including that the world isn't standing still. The kinds of things that are going to happen. Are the police now going to stop killing people? No, they're not. What happens when people protest and he's vindicated? That's why I said people should look at what's happened in Modi. Modi, who's the president in India, he was reelected, and right away he basically shut down an entire province under martial law, cut off their internet. He declared millions and millions of Muslims who'd been lived in the country for a long time non-citizens. That's under that scenario. The second imagine is, if Trump stays in power because he's able to delegitimize the election, he first contests the mail-in ballots. Then they take it to courts in various states. And then you start seeing this go to state legislatures. I'm not going to walk through all this stuff. There's a study been done on this. People can look it up. There's a major article in The Atlantic on this. But imagine all the things that he would do to change the rules of the game, backed up and enforced by these thugs in the street, as well as these paramilitary ICE people that he's developed, the National Guard, and a police forces that are acting often in contradiction even to their own commanders locally. Does anybody really believe that if he stays in power that way, that he is going to rescind anything that he's done through the course of November 3rd to January 20th? If he's able to get ratification for an election that is essentially stolen? This is something people should think about, because that will be... We might have Jason Stanley on without his picture on, saying, you know what, it is a fascist regime as he was defining it at the beginning, because it could be very, very different world.
Let me be clear about fascist creep that we need to pay attention to. The war on terror created certain institutions, imperialist institutions, that were devoted to rooting out potential terrorists among immigrants. What we've got is we've got a transformation of those institutions that were already prepared to deal with the utmost harshness with immigrants. We had Muslims being vilified. If we look at the war on terror, we look at Trump's first actions, the Muslim ban, we now have that institution being directed against political opponents. It used to be that this institution was hunting out immigrants, Mexican and Latin American, Latino immigrants. Now they're being explicitly redirected against leftists. That should concern every American. That's a first they came for moment. Once you have this institution directed against leftists, once you have the universities, the press, the education system being targeted, which Trump is being very explicit about, then we're talking about genuine transformation. And I fear that's what we're facing. Political opponents being targeted. Trump talked about radical professors and of course, teachers. But what deeply worries me, one of the things that deeply worries me is the use of these war on terror institutions now being deployed against political opponents and peaceful protests. Look, democracy is unusual. Democracy is unique. Most countries live under some form of authoritarianism, some kind of banana republic dictatorship. Democracy only works if we all are devoted to it. We come from different paths, but a democracy is about us all living together and being devoted to that system. I truly believe we face a moment where we are risking this system. This isn't going to be good for anyone, even those who think they will gain from it. Let's get out there on the streets peacefully. Let's get people to the polls, get young people to the polls, get everyone to the polls. Let's remember this isn't going to be election day. It's going to be election week or election month.
You were just listening to Jason Stanley and Andy Z on Resisting Fascism. They spoke on September 30th. Andy Z is spokesperson for Revolution Books and co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. Jason Stanley is professor of philosophy at Yale University and author of How Fascism Works. This program is produced by Alternative Radio based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and progressive, and in our 35th year, we're supported solely by individuals just like you. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. If you'd like a free copy of a printed transcript, PDF, or MP3 of this program, just give us a call. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.